98.7 FM. Arizona's sports station. Bickley and Murata.
It's going to be lit, is what I hear every single day. It's the greatest radio show ever.
Dan Bickley. Vince Murata.
It's the greatest show on earth.
Bickley and Murata.
This is the greatest.
Good morning and welcome.
I love this show.
Me too.
It's the greatest radio show
really
that's ever existed.
It really, really
in
is.
In case you needed a refresher for the new version of the prolonged open.
Let's cut the crap, Mr. Murata.
Bickley and Murata.
I hate everything about this show. This is the worst show in the world. Happy Thursday, everybody. Dan Bickley, Vince Murata, Jarrett Carlin. On a day that I'm very much looking forward to digging and sinking my teeth into, we have got a DeAndre Ayton / Phoenix Suns story that is just so hot and so suddenly cool. And we've got a new incoming commissioner in the Pac-12 to be announced. Who would have thought on the day of a presidential inauguration that Larry Scott would exit stage left from the Pac-12.
Yeah, let me just say this. I don't know who that's going to be, but I'm really excited about it.
Well, yeah, I'll tell you what.
It's not till June, unfortunately.
Yeah, I know, but the Pac-12 really needs this, even for a lot of reasons, systemic and perception and everything. They've got a chance to do this right. I'm really going to be fascinated by whom they choose to do this job. Who wants this job? It's going to be great. It's going to be fascinating to watch.
Well, I mean, Larry Scott has proved one thing. The earning potential on that job is immense.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, he bankrolled $40 million. Thank you, Larry. Now go back to the Women's Tennis Association and figure out how to stop female tennis players from grunting. I kid you not, that was the next big line item on his agenda in the WTA before he got hired by the Pac-12.
I know.
He was going to do a deep dive on women grunting in tennis.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a real issue. It actually is an issue, but you're right. It was on the top of his list.
Oh, it's a terrible issue.
Yes,
it's
I agree.
A terrible issue. And there's nothing good about male grunting either.
No, I agree with that, too.
Yeah. But
I'm anti-grunt.
So am I. But the male grunting is far more pervasive. The female grunting is, that is to say, in tennis.
I think there's a lot more extreme examples on the female side.
Because it's all gamesmanship. Nobody has to grunt.
No. We both played tennis. I was never a grunter. But now, not on the tennis, but now I grunt when I get up out of a chair. So
I had lunch next to Doug Franz in the press box once. I think he was grunting while eating. Yeah, I think that happened. Like that? I can't recall.
Did you ever see the movie The Flamingo Kid with Matt Dillon? He's a cabana boy, and he gets invited to this rich family's house for dinner, and he's a moan eater. So he's eating his meal, and the whole family's just looking at him. He's like, nom, nom, nom,
nom, nom. That reminds me of, you ever see Defending Your Life with Albert Brooks?
One of the most underrated movies ever.
So in the movie, is in the afterlife, and everything they eat is the best thing they ever eat. So yeah. Every bite is, oh,
I love that movie.
I can tell eating is a very personal experience for you, Carlin, so I don't know if you've got room to talk.
It's true. I don't make noises, though, usually. Sometimes I do. Yeah. Sometimes unintentionally.
The fervor that you exhibit sometimes is frightening to me.
I have very few joys in life, and eating is one of them.
That's okay. All right. I'm cool with that. Yeah, so the Ryan McDonough, I'm sorry, so the DeAndre Ayton story is so crazy that Ryan McDonough is now tweeting out.
Oh, no. Here we go.
We are going to have, I'm telling you, if I were you folks, I'd stick around for 4 hours. It is going to get weird here today. All right? I'm telling you, I feel it. This is going to be a worthwhile 4 hours. Start the show, Carlin.
The Splash. Splash. The stories making waves in the sports world. The Splash.
Panama.
The Splash, brought to you by Presidential Pools, Arizona's number one pool builder. See why at presidentialpools.com.
Right, we start the Splash. The Suns getting back in the win column last night, 109-103 over the Houston Rockets at the Toyota Center. DeAndre Ayton went off for 26 points, 17 rebounds, and a career-high 5 block shots in the win. Devin Booker had 24. Suns led by as many as 20 points early in the third, 15 points with a little over 6 minutes to go in the fourth. The lead got all the way down to 2 in the final minute and a half. Ayton and Booker hit 4 straight free throws, and then Booker iced it with a layup with 15 seconds to go. Suns now 8-5, return home for back-to-back meetings with the Nuggets tomorrow and Saturday.
Okay, let these words sink in, Suns fans. DeAndre Ayton just won a fairly pivotal game for the Phoenix Suns. What he did in the fourth quarter last night and late in that game, his whole game was terrific. But what he did at the end was the best he has ever been, and it's not even close. So that's 2 games in a row now. 2 in a row. Can we make it 3? Because remember, sports fans, if 1 wasn't good enough, and it's not, 2 isn't good enough either. Can we get 3?
And he's got back-to-back games against Jokic. Right,
listen.
He plays good against Jokic.
I could, honestly, dude, I could not be more excited than about what he rose up and gave this team last night.
I would love to share your excitement, but I knew it was coming.
Yeah.
We got our first glimpse of the Brooklyn Nets' big three as Kyrie Irving decided to show up for work last night in Cleveland. Irving had 37 points, Kevin Durant 38. But the Nets fell to the Cavs 142-137 in double overtime. Colin Sexton had 42 points in the win for Cleveland. A lot of good and some ironing out to do, obviously, with the big three. You would think with that immense amount of talent, chemistry would kind of take a backseat to talent. But when you can't stop anybody, you can't win. So let the record show, because we made wagers. That's one game together with all three of them.
Okay.
I only need 19 more of those to be ready.
Okay.
The NBA has postponed the Memphis Grizzlies' next 3 games. That happened this morning. Grizzlies haven't played since taking on the Suns on Monday, and contact tracing has led to unavailable players. So their game tomorrow night against Portland and then back-to-back games Sunday and Monday against Sacramento have been shelved. I know there's a lot of people around the Suns who have a vested interest in the Suns that are still worried about what this means for them.
Okay, we just have to embrace that this is the reality, and basketball players are not going to have a seamless schedule. It's going to be difficult, and we're just going to have to all accept that this is going to be the reality. They haven't announced the back end of the schedule for a reason. They got a week to play with that was going to be an all-star kind of rest week. We just have to embrace it.
Yep.
There's just there's no two ways about it.
Coyotes hoping what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas after they got beat up 5-2 last night at the hands of the Golden Knights. Vegas jumped out to a 3-0 lead, cruised to the victory. 2 straight losses now to the Knights for the Coyotes. Those two teams come back to the Valley for the next 2 games on Friday and Sunday. Knights are pretty good.
You know how bad a 4-game sweep hurts if you're a baseball team?
Yeah.
You imagine being a hockey team during a 4-game.
That's one thing to have a 4-game losing streak, but to be swept in the regular season in 4 straight games, that's rare territory. ASU Arizona get together on the hardwood tonight at Desert Financial Arena before running it back at McHale Center in Tucson next Monday. Sun Devils just struggling. They've lost 4 of their last 4 games. Wildcats snapped a 2-game skid with a rout of Oregon State last Thursday night. Tonight's game gets underway at 7. You can hear it right here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Big news in the Pac-12 as it was announced yesterday that embattled Commissioner Larry Scott is on his way out. Scott will remain on the job until June 30th. But his contract was scheduled to run through June of the next year. On the preliminary candidates list, there's a lot of names, but a few of them that stand out in these here parts. Arizona AD Greg Byrne, now at Alabama. Former Arizona AD Greg Byrne, now at Alabama. ASU Athletic Director Ray Anderson. Mm-hmm. Gene Smith of Ohio State, formerly of ASU. All on that preliminary list of candidates.
Yeah, and who knows where else that list is going to go. They've made it clear from what I've read that they want somebody with deep college experience. So no no real successful executives from some tangential line of business coming in to run the conference.
From nobody from the Women's Tennis Association?
That's right. Yes. It's like not repeating the Larry Scott mistake all over again. But I would suggest even further that the next person has to have a real intimate knowledge of the Pac-12.
Yeah.
There are some things that are wrong about this conference that you don't know until you know them, until you live them.
True. But the potential is there. I think we can agree on that. ASU football news, Antonio Pierce elevated and will serve as the sole defensive coordinator for 2021. Of course, last season, Pierce split those duties with Marvin Lewis. After a year away from football, former Cardinals head coach Steve Wilks back on a coaching staff. He was hired today as the defensive coordinator at Mizzou under head coach Eli Drinkwitz. Wilks last coached in 2019 with the Browns as their DC, and the Cardinals yesterday signed two more players to futures contracts. Linebackers Jamal Carter and Donald Rutledge. There you go. There's your splash.
Jamal Carter? Oh, the phone.
You've heard that so many times, you've even got the cadence down. There's your splash for Thursday, January 21st. What has gotten into DeAndre Ayton? We'll try to answer that question next. It's Bickley and Murata live from the Ak Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Dan Bickley, Vince Murata,
Bickley and Murata,
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
Suns will start out on offense, working left to right as Bridges penetrates. Got it to Ayton for the jam time. That's how you want to start a half of basketball.
Yeah, it sure is. A nice aggressive dribble drive. Make the shot blocker step up and then dump it off to his responsibility, who finishes with the flush.
He was a monster for us tonight and really efficient. And so I think he anchors the defense in a number of ways, being able to switch him out onto smaller guys, distracting and blocking shots. And we hope he understands that he can be that kind of player every single night.
26-17-5. That was the stat line for DeAndre Ayton, described by his head coach Monty Williams there as a monster in a 109-103 win over the Houston Rockets. Suns break that mini two-game skid that they were on. And more importantly and more exciting than even the win, and wins do matter, and that was another game that fell into the category of a game the Suns should win. And they did, finally. But back-to-back really, really strong performances from DeAndre Ayton, coming off of an extended week-long break.
Yeah, and coming off a moment when the doubts about DeAndre Ayton were greater than they've ever been, greater than they've ever been, to the point where smart basketball people were going, uh-oh, I don't know if this kid's going to make it. And it was the first time, and this is what he's responded with, I'm tremendously excited. Last night, as the game went on last night, throughout pretty much the first 2.5 quarters, and I'm watching intently, obviously, every moment of it, particularly from the prism of DeAndre Ayton and how he's going to perform. And I thought, okay, this is still good, but he's taken a tiny step back. He's not cutting hard to the rim. There were little things along the way. I'm like, okay, come on, to get there, do that. And then in the fourth quarter, where he took his game was well beyond what he did two games ago. The block shots, the dunks, the force, the presence. That's it, folks. That's everything. You get that guy locked in like that, and now you're talking about something. Now you're talking about a basketball team that might give the Lakers all they can handle in a Western Conference final. Might. But I would suggest this. You have to understand that stringing these things together, he's got to do it. Chris Paul said it best. He's got it, but he's got to do it. The psychology behind DeAndre Ayton is fascinating to me, because when you look at his physical skills, they blow your mind. If he's 7 feet tall with a 7'6" wingspan, those are genetic gifts that, when combined with his fluidity and his mobility and his athleticism and his sense of rhythm, that the ceiling for this guy is so high it's unbelievable. And yet those gifts probably allowed him to really not have to push that hard growing up in the world of basketball. I told you what an NBA expert said, that one of the fundamental problems with DeAndre Ayton is he dominated AAU competition playing at half speed. Dominated. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, it creates a paradigm for every individual. And now it's breaking that out and creating something new. It's happened two games in a row.
Yeah.
And Chris Paul's on him. After the game, Chris Paul was impressed and gave him praise, but he's got more.
Yeah, here was CP3 on Fox Sports Arizona last night.
Just trying to stay on him. Explain to him how easy this game is. You know, at times, especially when you're playing with, you know, good players, unselfish players, a guy like Book, all the guys that we got on our team, you know, we stay on him because we know what he's capable of. But the best players in this league, they do it night after night, you know, not just once every few games. So we're going to keep pushing him. He got it. He just got to, you know, do it.
Yeah, going into the game and even off the game that he had Monday against Memphis, which he did against a player playing out of position. And, you know, Xavier Tillman actually is having a pretty good rookie season, but, you know, normally speaking, he wouldn't have been on the floor against DeAndre Ayton. I wanted to see how he would do it against a guy who's having a really good year in Christian Wood and his backup, DeMarcus Cousins, who's, you know, still not what he was, but an NBA caliber center. How would he perform? And he performed very well against those two guys. Monty Williams talked about that last night as well.
Christian Wood is a really good player. And I just felt like D.A.'s physicality and being able to distract some of his shots was huge for us. But I just thought D.A. was, you know, more physical in that matchup. And then DeMarcus, you know, for years, he was one of the best bigs, if not the best big in the league. And he's just really smart. You know, he knows how to use his body. I thought D.A. did a good job of keeping his composure when DeMarcus tried to hold him or use his physicality against D.A. I thought D.A. kept his composure, which is, you know, again, a good sign for a young big.
And then here was the man himself, DeAndre Ayton, speaking with ESPN after that performance on what he's getting and how Chris Paul's presence has really helped him.
To be honest, he's taught me so much. You know, he's even taught me how to, you know, really get out of the pick and rolls and go for lobs and, you know, just being that defensive anchor, talking when I'm fatigued in late games like this. And, you know, he's always on me, and I don't take it as nothing. I don't take it personal. You know, I'm just so honored that he takes the time out to tell me constructive criticism, and I take the best out of it and make it a positive, man. And I'm just blessed, you know. Dude has high IQ, and he brings a lot to this team, and the leadership he brings and how he approaches the game is just contagious.
And then moving on again, you get to back-to-back games. Hopefully, if these games are still played, I know there's some doubt on that and some hesitation by people that have a vested interest in the Suns, but Nikola Jokic is having a fantastic year. Historically, yeah. DeAndre plays pretty well against him.
Yeah,
DeAndre Ayton as well became just the third player in the league this year to have back-to-back games of 16 or more rebounds. He joins Julius Randle of the Knicks and Rudy Gobert of the Jazz to do that.
Okay.
And he did it in so many different areas. You know, yeah. The number we didn't talk about a lot, 5 block shots.
Again, it's to me, I think DeAndre Ayton, if he were motivated to block shots, could become an all-time great at blocking shots. His what I'm talking about, 7 feet tall, 7 foot wingspan, thin, mobile, fluid movement. That and last night he showed it. He showed it last night.
That was Olajuwon-esque.
Yes, those were impactful defensive block shots, the kind that influenced the other team psychologically. This is the kind of stuff I've been harping about for 2 years. Not that it has any correlation to his play. I'm just saying that the force that he's playing with is what's making the difference. The volume he's playing at is what's making the difference. He did something last night that I've never seen him do, and it had nothing to do with the block shot, had nothing to do with the slam dunk. He grabbed a rebound with his right hand and slapped the ball with his left. That's an alpha male basketball move, and anyone who's ever played pickup basketball knows what I'm talking about. When you go up and you get the rebound with one hand and you want to show a little oomph behind it, you slap your left hand on the ball. He did that last night. I've never seen it. You might have. I never have. So he is different, and it's working. And it's
and
two games in a row. And I hope DeAndre Ayton is feeling the difference that creates. Because if it does, we might be watching a 30 for 30 3 years from now. The redemption of Ryan McDonough.
Well, I don't think that's
going to happen.
You
might be going to Ryan McDonough and telling him thank you for not drafting Luka Doncic.
I didn't check his Twitter account. What did Ryan McDonough's tweet say?
I'm being a little bit silly about that, but what DeAndre Ayton just did last night with his gifts, well, I'll take that. You'll never hear me mention Luka again. You do what you did last night, I'll never mention those two words again. So no, really not that complicated.
So he only has to average 26, 17, and 5.
I love Ryan's. Well, it's again. What are you with the numbers? Why are you so obsessed
impact.
With numbers?
Because force and aggressiveness doesn't move the number
it
on the
leads
scoreboard.
To numbers.
Okay.
Well, I mean, he had his second most impactful game last game, and they didn't win.
Yeah. Yes.
So it can't just be the impact.
Well, Kyrie Irving had 37 last night, and the Nets didn't even win.
I mean, basketball is a numbers game. We can't, we got to look at them.
Okay.
There's a reason why they keep the statistics.
So what did Ryan McDonough say? Ryan's got great comedic time, and the underrated thing about Ryan McDonough, he's got a great sense of humor. What did he tweet out?
1 hour ago, tweeted out DeAndre Ayton's stat line. It was a minute 28 highlight reel of him from the NBA's official account.
Uh-huh.
He says, I hope the Suns fans who crush DeAndre still bring the same energy when he's dominating.
I sure think they are.
Yeah.
I sure think they will.
Yes. We'll see if he can continue. It's
an old phrase, Vinny. It's called better late than never.
And it's very true. How late is it, though?
Yeah, right.
Coming up next, new leadership in the Pac-12. We've been waiting for it, and it's coming in June. We'll share our thoughts on the exit of Larry Scott next. Bickley and Murata, live from the Ak Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Oh, a day of change yesterday in the Pac-12. News coming out, Larry Scott, his 11-year tenure as the commissioner of the conference, coming to an end a year early. There are some very important media negotiations on the horizon for the Pac-12, and I know Larry Scott painted this as we're doing this amicably and, you know, mutually. This was Larry Scott getting what he's deserved for quite some time, being shown the door by the Pac-12. Leadership.
Yeah, without a doubt.
And this is a good move. And again, I said it somewhat tongue-in-cheek in the splash, Bick. I don't know who the next guy is going to be, the next woman's going to be, who the next commissioner is going to be. It's going to be an upgrade.
Okay, the number one thing that the next commissioner, he's going to have very, very clear marching orders from the presidents that hire him, and that those marching orders are going to be make us more money. That's basically what the member schools are going to demand from the conference. Send us bigger checks so we can compete with our competition in college football. It's a fundamental problem in the Pac-12, and it's only getting worse and worse and worse. Okay, to get there, they've got to solve this dilemma they have about what is their platform? Where are their games going to be broadcast? How can you consume Pac-12 football? Where can you watch Pac-12 football? They've got to decide that before they can market Pac-12 football.
Mm-hmm.
So those are going to be two real strict marching orders. I could only read the lead of Stuart Mandel's piece in The Athletic, but I really liked the one line that was an anonymous Pac-12 administrator said the new guy in charge in the Pac-12 is going to have to drive vision with CEOs and basically drive policy to the athletic directors. Drive belief and all that stuff with athletic directors. And it's so that's a two-pronged thing. And you could see how Larry Scott really failed in that last year, where he signed that deal with Kaidel and yet had no integration with the people underneath them about what, when, why, who, where, all that stuff. So it's not only just that, it's about growing the Pac-12 and lessening this perceptual gap that is out there. The way the Pac-12 conducted themselves during the pandemic, it might have been the wrong thing. It might have been the right thing at the time. It might have been with all great intentions. But other conferences are now going to negatively recruit against the Pac-12. So if you got a young kid who's sitting out there in Los Angeles and he's a five-star cornerback, wide receiver, whatever, and in comes Clemson, in comes an SEC school, they're going to say, do you really think the Pac-12 loves football?
Yeah.
Do you really think they care about your football career? look what they're willing to do. How willing were they to play? How did that help their players last year? It didn't. Just see how fast they got back on it. They're followers. Why would you waste your time there? They haven't been into the playoffs in the last 4 years.
Yeah.
Why would you waste your time there? All that stuff is good. It's going to take years to undo something.
They could literally just say to a recruit, so how many Pac-12 games did you watch last year?
Yeah, that's
right. None? Because you don't get the channel that they're on?
Yeah.
Or you don't stay up late enough to watch them?
This is from Pat Forty's column. And it starts with the good, what the Pac-12 has to sell to its next commissioner. He writes, the Pac-12 is a great conference in many ways. Academically strong, phenomenal cities, largely desirable weather, a commitment to athletic leadership diversity, Olympic sports excellence, and a fan passion that stops short of obsession and yields fewer compliance issues. And then he puts in parentheses, some would argue the fan passion stops problematically short, creating a lack of urgency to compete with the rest of the Power Five.
The
I think that's
both.
Fair.
The answer is both.
But then he follows up with this, and this is the reality. The Pac-12 is working on a 16-year streak without a football national title and a 24-year streak without a men's basketball national title. It has failed to put a team in the college football playoffs since 2016. Rival conferences have been able to poach the West Coast by selling a greater commitment to winning and greater national exposure for players, things the Pac-12 has a hard time rebutting. There you go. That is issue number one on the desk of the new commissioner who takes over in June. Because you can't refute that the city argument. What conference has, and I know we're in the West, and I know the passion isn't the same as it is in the SEC, because really there's not much else there to root for. So you do have that that particular argument. But look at the market size. L.A., San Francisco, Seattle, Phoenix, Denver, Portland.
Far more desirable parts of the country. Far more.
Yes.
And so what to me is also a fundamental issue here is, so the Pac-12 definitely has some advantages. And if the school was good in the revenue-generating sports, I would think the Pac-12 would rank really as high as anybody combined in basketball and football. But I think also that one of the fundamental problems here is that LA kids now are starting to go south. That as I said during an interview with Greg Byrne, there's this movement now where culturally kids from LA can conceptualize and digest the idea of going and spending their next 4 years in South Carolina or Tuscaloosa or wherever. Because they go there and they go, okay, you know what? Maybe I once felt this way about the South, but man, this place is awesome. Look at this. Look at the stuff they're offering me here. And look at this. I'm a god here.
Yeah.
And it's, you put all that together, they go, okay, you know what? I'll do this. So the Pac-12 has got to get back into the game and make their conference cool again to the point where an LA kid is never going to leave.
Well, we had Larry Scott on this show in October before the football season got started, the truncated Pac-12 football season. And, you know, he answered all the questions. But I think one of the takeaways we both had from that conversation was, okay, he answered the questions, but Larry Scott's perception of the conference is far different from what everybody else thinks about it. One of the things I think that was really his undoing was the publicity around the reporting from John Canzano and John Wilner about the lavish headquarters in San Francisco and what the Pac-12, not bringing in the revenue that the other conferences are, but what they're spending just to have a nice workplace.
Yeah.
Larry Scott told us in October, you asked him the question about fiscal responsibility, and he said this.
I don't. No, I think there's a perception out there that's just incorrect, in my view. I think what people have a tough time comparing apples to apples is the other conferences that have conferences and also have their own networks. Their networks are all run by outside entities, so they don't have the headcount. They don't have rent. They don't have other things. But folks don't seem to be able to make that distinction. So as a result, when people look at the Pac-12, we've got 200 people that work for the Pac-12 networks, and you know the office space and the technology and everything that goes with that, people kind of lump together. So we're also based in San Francisco, If you look where some of the other conferences are based, they're in different markets, and that decision to be in the Bay Area certainly preceded me. So there are some differences, but we benchmark ourselves every year against the other conferences, against other networks. We've got a rigorous process we go through with our finance committee, made up of university presidents and university chief financial officers, and I'm very confident that we're pursuing the mission and the mandate on behalf of our members at a high level in an efficient way.
Hearing that soundbite again, it boils my blood all over. He accuses everybody of not having the ability to compare apples to apple. You made it an apples to orange comparison by saying, no, we don't need to partner with an established television entity to launch our network. We're going to do it all ourselves. And just because you have 200 employees, that might be a bigger reason to avoid high rents in downtown San Francisco if you're going to have your own facilities.
What do you think those 200 employees make combined?
I mean, it's an expense, absolutely. But if you were the commissioner of the Pac-12 and you came up with this idea, we're not going to partner with Fox. We're not going to partner with CBS. We're not going to partner with ESPN. We're going to do this from the ground up. We're going to do it with 200 employees, and we're going to have these great technological studios. Where should we put it? Somewhere cheap? No. Let's put it in the middle of the most expensive city on the West Coast. None of what he said in that soundbite made any sense. But that, again, goes to show you his idea of the perception of the conference was 180 degrees from the reality.
Okay, and I think you just hit on it. I think as recompense, Larry Scott needs to take a job either in Corvallis or Pullman, just to pay for that civic debt that he owes us all.
Thank you for excluding Tucson. I appreciate it.
Yeah, well, I could have.
But why besmirch those fine cities by including Tucson on that list?
I think that Larry Scott at one point in time thought he was going to create Camelot for the Pac-12, and that included all the bells and whistles at headquarters, at the one conference that was visionary enough to start their own network. There have been a lot of sports teams, leagues that have thought, oh, it's we can become a media company. What does that take?
Yeah.
All of them realized it's not quite that simple. Yeah, right, exactly. So I don't think Larry Scott was just being bougie. I think Larry Scott was just kind of envisioning something that never had a chance of happening.
Yeah.
And it's the whole thing got sidetracked early on because of DirecTV, and then they just put one bad bet on top of another, and here we are.
Yep.
But now they're in great position, Vinny, because they've got flexibility for 2024.
Three more years, baby.
They have got the thing that really ticks me off though about this is so say maybe you overshot your mark. Happens to the best of them. Jerry Colangelo overshot the mark when he built Chase Field. Thought he could get 40,000 a night easy, can get 18,000 a night. And so it happens, okay? But the terms of that deal, the fact that they basically paid the note of the landowner for that building by the time their lease is done, they have paid off about 98% of the original cost of that building in rent.
Yeah, we'll have a lot more on this, including some candidates to consider for the Pac-12 as the show goes on today. Coming up next, some NFL hash marks as we get ready for championship weekend. That's straight ahead. It's Bickley and Marotta, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Bickley and Marotta, hash marks.
So he looked good. He's just he's in the protocol, so there's only certain things he can do, and it's a limited basis, but today is a little bit limited practice. So this fit right into what he could do. But he took all the snaps and, he feels good. So, I mean, we're just going to follow this protocol as close as we possibly can. So.
That was Andy Reid, the head coach of the Kansas City Chiefs yesterday. It was all eyes on the practice for the Chiefs as they head into the AFC Championship game against Buffalo. What can number 15 do? Got the update yesterday, but although Andy Reid did come out yesterday, Bick, and say today is really the important day. You know, in a normal NFL week, the Wednesday practice is not all that pivotal in terms of practice participation. Thursday, obviously, a lot more pivotal. So, you know, that doesn't change today. All eyes still on Kansas City to see what Patrick Mahomes can do. I, again, will stick by what I said yesterday. I think there's not a chance on God's green earth that he's not the starting quarterback for Kansas City on Sunday.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, the stakes are just too high, and the player is into it. Yeah, this is. I don't see any issues here whatsoever. I do think, though, how do I phrase this? I think a lot of there's a lot of hushed tones out there regarding this, in my opinion, and it's almost as if the NFL is aware that their interests in terms of handling the concussion pandemic in the NFL, this isn't necessarily a great look for them. Only because of the visual of Patrick Mahomes not being able to stand up. Those are the kind of images that move people. Those are the kind of things that make people go, whoa. And there have been a lot of attention on this, and I think the NFL would rather it not be. I do think there's something to be said about the NFL actually making headway in this. And was it Mark Schlereth who was making this point? Who were we talking to that was making this point that you don't necessarily, that the babying and coddling of quarterbacks maybe is working because you don't see a lot of this anymore. Maybe not as much as you used to. I don't know. It seems to me that there's a lot of cloak and dagger here with this. I don't think for a minute that the Buffalo Bills are being thrown off. I'm sure they fully expect Patrick Mahomes to play.
I don't know if you saw
Trubisky. I think the NFL just wants this to be as much of a non-story as possible.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw Tre'Davious White's comments. He said, look, we know he's going to be out there.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't said like with any sort of tone of doubt of, you know, shenanigans going on. But going back to that point, we can all agree that the NFL for years and years, and they've made out the concussion settlement payments, they were negligent on this front. And there's still that faction of the old school that, you know, doesn't want to see the quarterbacks coddled or protected to the degree they are. That's why last week weekend was really somewhat jarring to the viewer, mm-hmm. to see two of the premier quarterbacks in the league, two of the biggest names in the last two MVPs, to leave because of concussion protocol, and neither return to the game. You might be a doubter of the NFL on this front. Yeah. And like you said earlier, better late than never. It's late. Certainly this movement towards quarterback protection and the seriousness of head injuries,
mm-hmm.
but they're doing the right thing here. And I know there's going to be people when Patrick Mahomes runs onto the field on Sunday to say he's not okay.
Yeah.
But I don't think they would put him out there if he wasn't okay. I truly believe that.
Truly okay, what does that mean? I don't think it's like a red button and a green button. You know what I mean?
No, there's no
shades along the way.
Yeah, there's no absolute 100%. Yeah. Nobody's at 100% at this point.
It's okay. See, here's the way that I looked at it. The injury, what we saw, everybody we've talked to has had the same reaction to Patrick Mahomes' injury. It was basically, wow, he really looked jacked up over something that was not helmet to helmet. Mm-hmm. How did he hurt himself that much? Then came a wave of unsubstantiated reporting that was actually a neck issue, a pinched nerve, head twisted, and that led to some sort of temporary paralysis. Okay, that's I guess, viable, but then the guy isn't going to be declared out the rest of the game under those circumstances. There was really never any definitive, yep, grade one concussion. There's been nothing about that. Nothing.
No.
And again, well, it's a patient's medical rights. Okay, yeah, of course, I get that. But when you're talking about an issue that's allegedly a front burner issue in the NFL, these things have to be called
what
they are.
By the way, I don't know if you heard this either. Tyreek Hill, we were wondering earlier in the week, as many people were, about the shove on the sideline that was captured by CBS cameras, his receiver coach, Greg Lewis.
Uh-huh.
Tyreek was asked about it, and he had a distinct answer.
I feel like I played a game with so much passion, you know, and not only me, but we put so much into this game that, you know, like I come off the sideline, you know, like fired up, you know, and I just give my coach a shove, you know. So that's just me and my personality, man. I'm just fired up and I'm just happy, you know, just to be in the NFL and just, you know, just to be a part of this great organization, you know. So, I mean, a lot of people seen it as me, like, being a hothead on the sideline, being a diva, you could say, but it wasn't nothing like that. It was just I'm fired up and just trying to give the guys energy, you know. So, because as you've seen, like, think about it. Like, I just wish people, I mean, everybody would just think about it. If I would have really pushed my coach, everybody would have been holding me back. So it was just like one of those fired up pushing. We laughing, we giggling, you know, we just enjoying, you know, each other.
I'll buy that because of the last argument.
Okay.
We've seen altercations on sidelines before, player versus coach, vice versa. There usually is a degree of somebody coming in to restrain, and there was nothing resembling that. Again, we didn't see what happened in the immediate aftermath.
We didn't. So how do you know that?
The only thing that really refutes that in my mind is it's possible that all of Tyreek Hill's teammates are afraid of him.
Okay, now you're getting to the truth of the matter here. Okay, first of all, Tyreek Hill has never done that before. I know because I asked somebody, and he was very hot. And yes, maybe you could just do that. Come on, man! And no, that coach was laughing that sheepish laugh like, yeah, okay, whatever. I don't care. He's not our player. And it's not going to change the way I think about Tyreek Hill. He is that's
second,
what he is.
He's double that to me.
Put it this way, if he was not a top five weapon in the NFL, this wouldn't be a laughing matter in Kansas City, I'll tell you that much.
Oh, you're right about that. I mean, there's definitely a pecking order, we know that.
Right, exactly. Oh, and by the way, we're not going to get to this now, but we're going to give people a heads up. Not
I have it if you okay.
Do we? I don't know if we've got time right now.
No, we've got
to give this justice. The Dan Campbell press conference in Detroit is phenomenal. It's really excellent. We're going to play the audio for you in a little bit. You're not going to want to miss that.
Well, yeah.
That's all I got
to
say.
And we'll tease it by saying it's hard not to, regardless of what you think of him as a coach and his resume, it's hard to listen to Dan Campbell and not get pumped up to some degree.
Oh, without a doubt.
And that might be the reason he's got that job, but we'll play that for you a little bit later on. Okay. Coming up next, Suns solved some issues last night. They got another strong performance from DeAndre Ayton. Still work to do. We'll get into their performance last night against the Houston Rockets straight ahead. It's Bickley and Marotta, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.